host, Gary No.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary No. This is a program for those who would like to know the truth, who are not listening for ideological or political guidance, who are not biased. We all have some biases, but none that hopefully would adversely affect the quality of another human being. We're here to empower. We'll show you the problem without in any whitewashing it, and then we'll show you the solution. We always begin with the latest on health. But boy, do I have some interesting stuff to share with you today. Things you've not heard before or seen. We're going to talk about nicotinamide riboside. Also, when you consume bioactive compounds from neem, that's N-E-E-M, it's a plant, mindfulness meditation is really important, and I'll explain why, and how to understand those free radicals that we never pay attention to when we eat a French fry or a pizza or drink alcohol. They are part of the toxic buildup in Alzheimer's brains. I'll deal with that. But we begin with a University of Iowa healthcare study, and this is about vitamin B3. And vitamin B3 is this really important nutrient. It's gotten thousands of research papers on it now. Why? Because it's been shown safe for humans and increases levels of the cell metabolite that is critical for cellular energy production and protection against stress and DNA damage. Studies in mice have shown that boosting the level of this cell metabolite, also you probably hear it now as NAD or NAD+, it has a lot of health benefits, including resistance to weight gain, improved control of blood sugar, lowering your cholesterol, reducing nerve damage, longer lifespan. Yeah, it does all that. And you don't need a lot of it. I would suggest taking 100 milligrams twice a day. Excuse me. You could take as little as 20 milligrams twice a day. But as you age, your natural production of DNA or NAD, it substantially is diminished. And then you lose the power of this metabolite in the aging process. That's why supplementation is necessary. The new research reported in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Communications was led by Professor Ray Carver, chair of biochemistry at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine. And it was with human beings. And each participant received either 100, 300, or 1,000 milligrams of the nutrient in different sequence with a 7-day gap between the doses. After each dose, blood and urine samples were collected and analyzed to measure various NAD metabolites in the process called metabolomics. The trial showed that the people who took the vitamin B3, or NAD, increased their NAD and metabolism by amounts directly related to the dose. The lower the dose, the lower they increase, the higher the dose, the higher they increase. No side effects of any dose was shown. Quote, this study shows that oral NAD safely boosts human NAD metabolism, and then all the other benefits come with that. It, by the way, was one of the nutrients in our anti-aging study on 5 separate occasions. And by the way, yesterday we had a conference call meeting with the major American university whose foundation department allowed us to use this. And they said that I didn't realize that they can actually predict the future of your biochemistry. I just thought they'd tell you whether or not you were able to reverse your cellular aging. But there's a whole lot more to it. What they can predict is approximate death. Well, that may seem morbid, but it's not. Why? Because if someone told you that you had 2 years to live, and that's if you did nothing, would you then start to seek ways to live longer, to push that back, or to ameliorate it altogether? And the answer is yes. We have the science today to be able to extend our lifespan, overcome disease. I'm doing it every day with people. And we've been doing it, we meaning a group of physicians, nurses, dentists, holistic dentists, nutritionists, dietitians, even life coaches, on ways that we can extend people's life, even after they have something either genetically programmed into their cells, and we can change that gene. We can change the epigenetics. So do not fear knowing the truth, because once you have what science says, this is what we know, you can then build on that. You can also show the health of different organs in the body and the age of different organs. I didn't know this. So they're going to take another probably 2 to 3 weeks before we get our final results. And then they're going to give it to us as a group and then individually. So it's a lot more complicated than what I thought. But this is the future of anti-aging. Now, from the National University of Singapore comes a study about the consumption of bioactive compounds found in the neem plant, that N-E-E-M, could significantly suppress development of prostate cancer. And the administration of what is called nimbolide, N-I-M-B-O-L-I-D-E, over 12 weeks, that's from the neem plant, shows reduction of prostate tumor size by up to 70% and decrease in tumor metastasis by up to 50%. But we have millions of Americans who have an elevated PSA, which is a precursor, shows there's inflammation in there, and that can lead to cancer. Now, prostate cancer takes a long time to develop, but once it does, then you've got to really act. And the good news is that we have a person, and we weren't testing for this, but it just so happens that on one of the blood chemistries, one of the measures was your PSA. This guy had a really, really high PSA, one of the highest I've ever seen. And at the end of the study, it was zero. So I am making that protocol available so others who want to reduce their PSA can do so. But mind you, it's not just taking some nutrients. It's a whole lifestyle modification change. From the University of Utah comes a study about mindfulness training provides a natural high, much like the runner's high. Now, the runner's high doesn't occur when you run or walk short distances. And it was really seen in people who were marathon training or even ultra-marathon training. And for those of us who would regularly go out and run 12 miles in a morning, because that gave us the ability to run a 20K, which is 12 miles, 12 point such and such miles, or a marathon, 26 plus miles, or a 50K. And about the 8 mile mark, you start to feel this sense of peace, just a calming nature. And your body just feels more fluid and flowing. And now we know that that's from the endorphins that come when you exercise aerobically, generally around an hour workout. So that's one way to feel good, and that lasts for hours. So I suggested people do 2 workouts a day, one in the morning, one in the evening. If you could do about 45 minutes, you'll begin to feel this. And that can take the edge off anxiety, depression, fear. It can really bring you down to a more normal level where you're better able to deal with problems. So mindful meditation now can be shown to do something very similar. It produced a healthy, altered state of consciousness in the treatment of individuals with addictive behaviors, not unlike what one might experience under the influence of psychedelic drugs. Achieving this altered state through mindful meditation has the potential life-saving benefit of decreasing one's addictive behavior by promoting healthy changes to the brain. The finding comes from the largest neuroscience study to date on mindfulness as a treatment for addiction, and it was published in Science Advances. So mindful meditation can help you get off the misusing opiates and have a clear, more open, conscious awareness of self. From Rutgers University, an article published in Cell Death and Disease, free radicals are blamed for toxic buildup in Alzheimer's brains. I've been saying that for a long time. How many times have you heard me say the underlying cause, physical cause, of most disease is inflammation? Now, what causes the inflammation is another level of awareness. Stress can do that. Distress really does it when we're on five-alarm fire all day long at the emotional level. When we're angry, when we're paranoid, when we're delusional, when we're manifesting some psychosis or neurosis, when we're dealing in a paranoid state and many other states of consciousness, that creates free radicals. That causes a lot of damage in our bodies. And that's why people are under stress frequently have heart attacks or strokes or cancer. So anything that we do each day that is pro-inflammatory is to some tiny degree causing free radicals, which can denature, destroy, or alter normal DNA, harms the cells. And that in turn is part of the mechanism that contributes to traumatic brain injuries and like Alzheimer's disease, which is a form of dementia. And while a buildup of the protein amyloid beta has been hypothesized to be the major driving force of Alzheimer's disease, there's now a whole new door that's been opened that's saying that's not the only cause. There's also another protein, after undergoing oxidation by free radicals, that could be a causative factor. Indeed, scientists have known for a long time that during aging or in neurodegenerative diseases, cells produce free radicals. And free radicals are toxic molecules that can cause a reaction that results in loss of electrons and important cellular components, including the channels. So the more healthy the diet, the more clean the diet, the more alkaline the diet, slightly alkaline, the healthier you're going to be, and simply eliminate all these pro-inflammatory agents. That's one of the reasons that I insisted that we do, well, we actually did two studies. I just wanted to see if I could disprove myself. I did one study where there were people on campus every day, and everyone had to do the same identical thing with different mindsets. You know, we all had our juices, we all had our vitamins same time, did our exercise in the gym, on the road, the water aerobics. Then we would find our own quiet place for 4 hours a day to do journaling and meditation and time to pet the animals and just bond with these wonderful sentient creatures. But simultaneously, I produced the same identical protocol, meaning everything was the same, except it was up to the person who stayed at home, a separate group who stayed at home. They weren't on campus, but they had the same identical protocol. So theoretically, if two different groups are given the same protocols, you should have similar or identical outcomes. The group at home, with the exception of one person, had completely different protocols, and none of them achieved the level to make it statistically significant. It doesn't mean they didn't try. It means that it makes a big difference when you're having a support system and you're not basing anything upon your own mindset. Because what happens in a day if you're going through the normal day and you think you've taken the time for green time, but didn't get to it today. I'll get to it tomorrow. And I only had one juice today. It's just so busy. I got so much to do, and I'll have the juices tomorrow. And what we found when we talked with each individual separately, and by the way, I would do lectures over the phone for them also. So they got the same lectures, same reading material, same films sent to them. So what we found is a person may think that they're being healthy, think they're making the right choices, but almost never do they as a complete protocol. Bits and pieces, yes. And that's just something you should understand, because for a lot of people, they say, Gary, I'm really stressed. What should I do? Why don't you look at all the different ashrams in the United States, in Canada, Mexico, India, that's a great place, and spend some quality time in silence, learning yoga, deep breathing, meditation techniques, having a simple, austere diet, at least it's healthy. Not gourmet, but all good nutrients going in, where you actually don't talk. I mean, there's nothing more discerning than, just imagine if you were in class and every word that a teacher said, a student came right in on top of it and said something else. Every word. nobody would learn anything. I had to even tell a friend last week, please stop talking. Oh, why? Because you're not listening. You would be surprised. In an entire day outside of this radio show, I almost never talk. One of the reasons I love being in this animal sanctuary here is silence. Because when I'm in New York, in the office, even walking down the street and stopped by people, I don't care if it's a restaurant, I got a question. And I'm happy to answer those questions, but that it's just so noisy, so congested. And now it's fearful. People are getting stabbed and beaten, and they're getting away with it. Not only is the criminal mindset able to have no element that it's not indulging, but the political system, the ideology is so perverted that it actually protects the criminals and condemns the victims. There's no change anywhere in the United States, and that's why people are moving in mass. You have no idea. I went to a farmer's market that should have been, it was right after the hurricane, should have been relatively empty, and it was packed. And two different people came over, who one from New Jersey and one from upstate, and said, we're moving down this area. Why? Because it's so peaceful. There's no crime. There's no pollution. There's a quality of life. That's correct. And I think people forget, why don't you move where there is a quality of life? There are great places in America to live. I've done a whole 8-hour webinar on it, all the information, the best cities, the worst cities, best states, worst states, for many different reasons of a family, a senior citizen, a young person. We're the most progressive-minded people. And I don't mean politically progressive, because those are completely, today, almost always, they're fascistic. So they have completely perverted the term of progressive. But anyhow, people are looking for quality of life, especially now that the body politic is just squeezing the life out of our freedoms and our ability to have freedom of choice in our decisions. In any case, just want to share that with you because we need to be less stressed. We need to be in an environment that is more hospitable. Now, depending upon your aesthetic needs, maybe you like the desert. Maybe you like the Utah and a Monument Valley, where they used to shoot all those John Wayne films like The Searchers and all those others. Beautiful place. But you also better make sure it has water. Better make sure if you're in Nevada, there's no water. Not to sustain anything, nor in Phoenix, nor about 17 states. They're going out of water. Great places at one time to live, not today. And that's what we have to do. We have to stop thinking. You can't live your life looking in the rearview mirror at what was the best moments in your life. You should be feeling the best moments are still ahead, the most exciting moments, the greatest repurposing adventures are still to come. And for most people, that's not the way they see it. That's unfortunate, because that also ages us prematurely. Anyhow, that's just the latest on health and healing. And by the way, I've told you this many, many times. This is from the Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development, published in the Journal of European Association for the Study of Diabetes. Regular consumption of fried food before pregnancy increases the risk of developing gestational diabetes. And that's not the first study on this. If anything, if you had an intended pregnancy, you and your partner should spend at least a minimum of 1 year detoxifying yourself physically and emotionally, because you may be eating a good vegan diet and you may be one completely overwhelmed, screwed up person, in which case your kid's going to end up with all that negative energy. So just understand, take your time, do it right, because whatever you're bringing into this world, it should be given all the advantages possible to start without having all the complications of our dysfunctional mindsets. We're going to take a break. We're 20 minutes into our program. We're going to come right back with really exciting insights. Please stay with us. nothing else, the music is the best. I select every song myself, and hopefully you enjoy it as well. But now to something that I'm only showing you because of something else that happened. Robert Kennedy had a best-selling book. And in fact, it was published by my in-house publisher, Skyhorse, where I have my own line. And to everyone's surprise, it became a monster hit, selling over a million copies. It became a New York Times number one bestseller. But the media excoriated him. He was attacked and vilified. But not a single thing in the book could they find was in error. The book was about Anthony Fauci and his corruption and him leading the corruption of the entire paradigm. I had sent him a lot of information on AIDS, and I let him know in a conversation that Fauci was behind the debacle of AZT, the most toxic drug outside of thalidomide I think we've ever created, and yet it was promoted by Fauci and the National Institutes of Health, and it was whitewashed. I know that for a fact because the person overseeing several of the campuses upstate New York that were doing the trials came into my office, Lynn Gannett, with a huge box of all the documents, including letters that she had written to the people at the FDA showing this study's a fraud. People are dying using AZT and they're being excluded from the results. Anyhow, and John Lauritsen wrote a brilliant book on AZT and the crime of allowing, and he was a leading gay in New York intellect, and how many gays, we estimate a minimum of a quarter, well, more than a quarter, about 300,000 died from using AZT. Well, and I just wanted him to know that there were other treatments that at that time were available. It wasn't as if the only thing people had was a dream or hope that a vaccine would be created, and that's what he kept working on. There's been over 100 vaccines made for AIDS. Not one, not a single one worked. But the public just keeps paying for this every year. And the drug AZT, then DDI and DDC, and protease inhibitors, etc., very toxic at the beginning. Only when they lowered the dose did they reduce some of the death. But that was after the fact. They never apologized. Just quote, as Sylvia Farber says, who wrote a lot on this, lessons learned. Well, we heard that about Vietnam, lessons learned. And Libya, lessons learned. Who pays for our lessons? 51 leading, in fact, the 51 leading intelligence experts, heads of the CIA, this National Security Agency, Homeland Security, they all said that Russia was behind the election. But turns out they were wrong. In fact, all four investigations, official federal investigations, showed that there was no Russian interference. Have you seen any of those people fired from CNN or MSNBC? No. Have any of them apologized for being wrong? The answer again is no. So if people are wrong who are policymakers, why do we still choose to believe them or publications or media outlets they're associated with? And the same way with the drug company. If a drug company has been caught dozens of times committing crimes against humanity, paid a fine, and nobody went to jail, but people's lives were lost, tens of thousands, possibly hundreds of thousands when it comes to Biox, and the company's stock goes up and everybody gets a bonus in the management, well, where does it say that the good ethics of good business is if you kill 100,000 Americans, but you made $12 billion and you only had to give $5 billion back, you netted $7 billion in working capital, that's good. It's not good. No one says anything. No one says, I'm sorry. No one says we did it wrong. That's what we're living with. Anyhow, his film finally came out. I just saw it. I highly recommend all of you see it. It's about his book. It's based upon his book. In there, however, and I don't know where he got the footage, but he has me on PBS with Tony Brown, with one of the people named Charles, who I'd worked with and reversed his HIV status. He was HIV negative when I finished and completely healthy. And then also the filming I did with Carrie Mullis, that was used in other stuff as well. So here is the takeaway message. Celia Farber did a brilliant job, and their researchers did a brilliant job showing that at the time that Anthony Fauci was working with select small groups within the AIDS community, and they themselves receiving lots of money, that we already had cures for AIDS. I want to show you this because I challenge any scientist, any physician, any bureaucrat, anyone at any federal agency to show that I'm wrong. But you won't, because I'm right, and we have the absolute, irrefutable, 100% concrete evidence. We have blood chemistries, we have medical reports, we have a whole team of 22 medical specialists. We have Tony Brown, we have Emmy Award-winning reporters, we have the whole series, I think 8 interviews on PBS. We have Bill Tatum, the Amsterdam News. We have all this evidence, and not a single person came to see what we were doing. Yet throughout the AIDS community, we were packed. 1,200 people getting treatment. Not one person died. Everybody got well. And I wanted to see if an advanced protocol would work in 2 separate locations. First, I did it at 1 location, took 16 months, and every single person seroconverted from HIV positive to negative, completely normal T cells, total health. But then, to see that its study could be reproduced without my input, I gave my protocol to a group of medical doctors and scientists, and these are really orthodox people. They're not into anything alternative. And Dr. Elena oversaw it, and at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a senior research fellow, they duplicated it. 10 out of 10 people seroconverted. Not a single person died or got worse. They all got better. That's 2 separate studies. All right? Here is a clip, because now I'm going to play this for you. And you can see the whole film, The Cost of Denial. By the way, I have now 11 films, award-winning documentaries, up on Rumble. And if you want to see these, and they're free, including what is it, 17,200 in the last 2 days have watched it? 17,200 people. Science for Sale. It's the Gary Nall Film Library. Gary Nall Film Library. And on Rumble. And you see 11 of the hardest hitting documentaries I've ever done. Here is a clip. You can listen to the audio, but when you watch the film, you'll see it. You'll see all the people. And it's a long film. And I've got 6 more behind that. Let's go to the clip.
Gary Nall, who says he can now offer evidence that people diagnosed with, quote, AIDS, who have turned to a non-toxic lifestyle, also return to good health. I'm Tony Brown. In a moment, good news about AIDS and HIV.
This man has been helped. I brought 2 other people on your show 3 years ago. They're both alive and well and continue to remain seroconverted.
Now let's talk about this man. This man, you say, is the benefactor of your protocol.
Yes.
All right, now we're going to ask him his experience. Then I'd like for you to describe what the protocol was that helped him convert from...
Could I mention one thing?
Please.
I'm sure many people watching, including doctors, are saying this is nonsense. Well, first, I have no proprietary interest. I've never charged anyone a nickel. That is correct. In fact, in my entire career as a nutritionist and as a health educator, I've never charged a single patient 1 penny. I have nothing to sell them. I have nothing to make. In fact, when I give my time and energy, it's for free, so it's not proprietary. Secondly, I could just say that this person's been improved, and who's to know otherwise? But you have in your hands medical documents. He has had blood workup done every 6 months for 8 years. So we have before, during, and after blood workups showing from AIDS, not just HIV infection, from AIDS, and one guy who couldn't be here this morning, he's stuck in traffic, we just found out, and at some other time you might want to interview him. He had 22 different life-threatening illnesses. He had endocarditis, he had encephalitis, he had Kaposi's sarcoma, he had pneumocystis cranii pneumonia. He was in St. Vincent's Hospital near death on several occasions. And today he is completely healthy also. Now, you were with him, you know him, you've seen his records, I have his records. So I would only make statements about people that I have their medical records that are open for people, any.
Well, I asked Al and you to bring medical records along today So whatever statements are made, I would have evidence and presenting them to this audience that there was some type of paper trail, medical right. paper trail, in terms of what you're stating. Now, Al, you were diagnosed with what is called AIDS in 1989.
That's correct.
Tell us about yourself. Do you have any idea what caused your immune deficiency?
Yes. I was an intravenous drug user back in the early 80s. I must have made contact with the AIDS virus maybe probably 14 years ago. I stopped using drugs over 10 years ago, intravenous drugs.
Was this after you were diagnosed with AIDS?
A little before I was diagnosed, I stopped using drugs. Then 2 years after, I went for a doctor's checkup. Doctor advised me to take a HIV test because I had a swollen lymph nodes glands.
Swollen lymph?
Yes.
Lymph node?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And also, I was losing some weight. I was getting weak. So I took the HIV test, and it turned out to be positive. So I panicked. I said, wow, I don't want to die. I'm very young.
How old were you?
I was like 30, 32 years old. Anyway, I said, I don't want to die. So I started going to the doctors, and the doctor says, well, took a blood test. My T cell count was at 800. So that's pretty good.
That's very
T
good.
T cell count
800.
Mm-hmm. So right away he says, take this. Well, we're going to give you a prescription of ACT. I said, but from what I gather, I think I'm pretty healthy still to take these toxic drugs that you're prescribing me. So I just started doing some research, and Dr. Noel was on the air one day. I was listening to him. There was so much information he was giving out as far as alternative approaches to AIDS and any other diseases we get.
How long did you stay on AZT?
Well, he did prescribe me the AZT drug, and I did take it for a week or two.
So you didn't use it very long?
No, I took it for a week or two because I started getting sick off of it. I started getting blurry vision, and I started, my body was starting to change. I felt something taking over my system.
Did you get your CD4 count, your blood count, after you took the AZT?
No, this was before.
But after you did take it, did your blood count, your count go down, CD4 count?
Yes, it did.
What did it go down to?
As a matter of fact, it went down to 600 then.
Went from 800, went from 800 to 600?
Yeah.
In a short period of time?
In a short period of time. So I just didn't feel good. It just didn't, my body just, I was being drawn. So I put the drug and just put it in the garbage can. I just didn't want to take that.
Now, after you got with Dr. Noel, and you then got involved in his program using his protocol?
Yes.
Now, what happened to you health-wise after you got involved in his program?
Well, right after I started doing his protocol, my lymph nodes went down. Now they're completely normal. They're down. I don't feel anything. I had them for years.
How long have they been down?
4 years.
4 years?
4 years, yeah.
And how long did it take after you started the program with Dr. Noel before they went down?
It took me about a good 6 to 8 months. Mm-hmm. I started detoxifying my system, and I just improved my health. I gained weight, for one, and I feel great right now.
Now, these are medical records you brought with you today.
That's right. You have 12 copies of my medical records there.
What do these medical records prove?
Well, one is a PCR test. A PCR test indicates the viral low level, HIV viral low level. It's negative.
What does that mean?
That means that there is no HIV virus in my system. It's out. They can't detect it in a blood test.
There are many tests that he's taken. It's not just one test. I ask individuals to test when they're at this level almost every 2 to 3 months for at least a year. And the reason I do this is because other physicians and public health officials should know that there's good science in the alternative perspective. And it may not be a therapy that they're familiar with because they're just not trained in it. But if the results are positive and you can document them and you have good medical blood workups, I mean, the blood workups are done at all the standard labs, and the physicians are all board certified physicians who are actually overseeing and administering the actual therapy, then either they say yes or no. But I went one step further. 2 years ago, I decided to get all the patients I could find in the country, not just ones I've helped, but any doctor's help. So I called over 600 physicians, and I asked them, do you have any patients that you've treated using alternative non-toxic therapies for AIDS? And many did. And I had a press conference in New York City. We had the scientists, the physicians, and the patients with their medical records, all of which had been pre-reviewed to make sure they met the criteria of having had AIDS, not just HIV infection, but AIDS, and had made major progress, not necessarily to the degree of this man, and others where they've actually seroconverted, meaning you cannot find, not only can you not find any HIV in his body now, you can't find antibodies.
On our last program on the subject of AIDS, we talked with Steve Atkins, a former HIV positive patient who, according to health department records, has converted to negative. He was introduced to us by nutritionist journalist Gary Null, who was instrumental in Atkins' AIDS treatment. And once again this morning, we're joined by Mr. Null and a HIV positive couple who want to keep their true identities a secret, so we're going to call them Joan and Jack. And later, we'll be joined by Michael Elner. He's the head of a group called HEAL, a group set up to help AIDS patients. Welcome.
Thank you, Bill.
The last time we were here, of course, we had Mr. Atkins on, and he showed his record, and things sort of just popped loose since then. We've been getting a lot of phone calls. But before we get into this interview with our other guest today, I'd like to get your view of the latest breakthrough, the headlines in the papers this week.
What breakthrough? I mean, we're not in the ice ages. This is an embarrassment. And unfortunately, this is exactly the kind of propaganda that the media has allowed to perpetuate as if this is the most exciting thing happening. Why didn't the media cover the story that ozone in vitro, same test tube, kills the AIDS virus? Linus Pauling's Institute of Virology showed that vitamin C can kill the AIDS virus. Glutathione. There are many, many different things that have been shown to do this. And I'm concerned that people will once again start looking for a drug combination and forget that we have live human bodies who have gone from having AIDS to normal, who've been HIV positive, who've never converted into AIDS, and who have gone from HIV positive to seronegative. I have two of those here. Now, this should make a headline. This won't get any attention. But in a test tube, suddenly that makes headlines. To me, that's absurd.
We get to our guests today. We'll call them Jack and Joan because they do not want to be identified. And we're going to talk to them about their conditions, and then maybe you can tell us what's being done to help them. To our guests, who are in silhouette, Jack and Joan, when did you discover that you were HIV positive?
I would say about a year and a half, 2 years.
And I might point out that you're married.
Yes. Both
married.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Now, what led to that discovery?
Well, for a while, I was feeling sick. At one time, I was using recreational drugs for a while. And for a while, I started feeling myself really physically tired, lost of weight. I didn't have much energy. And I figured maybe because of my lifestyle in the past, I decided to take the test. And to find out that I was positive.
Mm-hmm. And did your wife decide to do the same thing? Did you tell her you were positive, and then she went and took the same test?
Yes, I found out first, and when I found out I was positive, I told my wife to get tested because I had the fear that she was positive.
Now, how long ago was this?
This was
about a year and a half.
About a year and a half. Okay, and you started taking what kind of treatment?
I had went to a doctor, and they prescribed AZT, and I was on AZT for approximately 6 weeks, and I didn't feel much of a change. In fact, I was still tired. I still had the weight loss. I was hearing a lot of negative things about it, as well as feeling negative things about it, and I had attended a seminar and decided to get off the AZT, and I took a nutritional route. And I just made a big change in my diet. Big change in my diet, big change in my lifestyle. I had cut out a lot of things, and it seemed to help a lot. I started feeling a lot better.
Now, what's the prognosis for both of you today?
Well, I just want to say that I started out, you know, the first thing they tell you to do is to have your cell count taken, and I went from a 600, which is below normal, to 1,000, which is a normal cell count for anyone who is even not HIV, in, I guess, you know, less than a year. I too, well, we went to Gary's seminar and cut out everything as far as anything that would be bad for you: sugar, caffeine, drinking, smoking. I even stay away from passive smoke. We just follow a very, very healthy diet, and I can honestly say I feel in well health. And my husband went from a having like no T cells to a very positive test now that I guess Gary will explain to you that it's not active at all.
Yes, I think we'll turn to
the most important thing here is this.
Work up here.
This is a test from Roche Biomedical Laboratories, which is a division of Hoffman Roche. This is an official blood chemistry test. This shows that, and here's what's important, and this is why we're not talking about a test tube and stopping a virus in a test tube. These are live human beings. Their physician, using a holistic protocol, and this is a regular Orthodox doctor, in a year, this person went from HIV positive active virus to P24 antigen test negative, HIV antibody positive. That means the HIV to have no antigen 24 means you have no active HIV active in the body. All you have is the antibody. Now, that means this person has made substantial improvement. And this should be getting some attention because it shows, and this is not the only person. There are many people like this.
That would be the question. People say, well, sometimes, you know, these things happen in isolation, so to speak.
Let me find this. You have physicians watching right now. Any physician treating a patient with AZT and DDI and DDC, please send me any results where you have someone who tested positive using standard tests for HIV P24 antigen positive, who after using those therapies, after a year, tested negative, and also has no active viral titers and no opportunistic disease. I'd be very interested in seeing that, because I haven't found any, but I found many who've taken the different approach. Is that your experience?
Okay,
yes. My experience is with tens of thousands of people. The reason our group focuses on alternative approaches is that people doing the best are using them.
That's just part one. I have 18 people that completely seroconverted, totally healthy, and we followed them for 15 years. None died. 1,200 people who didn't seroconvert, who were completely healthy at the end of the treatment after about a year to 2 years, but still were HIV positive because they didn't take the advanced protocols. The regular people came in once a week. The advanced protocols were 6 days a week. It was a real commitment. But there's more. There's a press conference where you're going to hear a lot of doctors. You're going to hear the medical doctors on the team with our next clip, which will be on my next program. But now some really important news is coming up, and we want to get ahead of this. This is what Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci were funding, in spite of the fact that we were told, the whole world was told by Anthony Fauci, that Senator Rand, Paul, you don't know what you're talking about. And when he asked, are you funding gain-of-function research, they said no. Turns out that was a lie. But now we find out something brand new this week, that up in Boston at the university, they were doing brand new gain-of-function research that has created a virus 80% more lethal than the COVID virus. Why are they doing this? They shouldn't be doing any gain-of-function research. And who was funding it? National Institutes of Health, Anthony Fauci, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Let's go to the clip. I'll play part of it. The rest of it you can hear on PRN.live.
We have a saying on this show. that conspiracy theories are simply spoiler alerts, right? That in a few months, we normally see the truth. It started out perhaps as a conspiracy theory, but then it unfolds, and guess what? We get the truth. What sounded like a conspiracy theory, I think maybe a couple of years ago, that the idea that a friendly grandfather-looking guy named Anthony Fauci would help fund and then lead the largest crime in world history, perhaps. And then it would be covered up and hidden by the biopharmaceutical industry and world governments through censorship and lockdowns and all manner of cover-up. That the United Nations would admit with its backers and the World Economic Forum that its collaborators with big tech companies like Google and Facebook would bury the truth so that you don't get to learn what's actually going on in the world. That they would actually finally admit that they're spiking search results on everything from climate change to the pandemic. Watch.
You know, we partnered with Google, for example. If you Google climate change, you will, at the top of your search, you will get all kinds of UN resources. We started this partnership when we were shocked to see that when we Googled climate change, we were getting incredibly distorted information right at the top. So we're becoming much more proactive. We own the science, and we think that the world, you know, should know it. And the platforms themselves also do. But again, it's a huge, huge challenge that I think all sectors of society need to be very active in.
Oh, okay. So the United Nations picking what search results we get from everything from climate change to vaccines and everything else in between. Thank you. Thanks to the United Nations for keeping our search results clean.
Well, she owns the science and also the platforms, which she means the search engines.
Right. So that was a conspiracy theory, right? That started out, right, as a conspiracy theory that, wow, these global elites are actually controlling what we're allowed to see. And then the United Nations, they actually admit it. They tell us right in front of our faces what it is, what the truth about it. That climate was only one of the things that they partnered with Google to prevent you learning about. Well, we now know that that's all true. Well, then this next story sounds like an even crazier conspiracy theory that after a global pandemic forces, you know, millions of people into government mandated lockdowns, hundreds of thousands of businesses destroyed, lives ruined, hundreds of billions of dollars in profits for the biopharmaceutical complex, that they would try to do it all over again. With the very same people who led it the first time, almost as if it was a trial run, that first pandemic. Well, Bill Gates, Dr. Fauci, Peter Strzok, all of them, and the biopharmaceutical industry, they would be actively working on the real pandemic because the first one was just a trial run. It was just a
dress rehearsal.
A beta test, right? For the real thing that was actually coming. It sounds like a movie, but of course it's not. It's all true. It's not a conspiracy theory at all. We learned this week that researchers at Boston University produced a new strain of COVID that is 80% deadlier than before. They did it with your tax dollars. We covered this when it broke a few days ago, but now we're learning who's behind it, and it's incredibly disturbing. But first, we'll have some context here. So this was the Boston lab. Researchers at Boston University, who are now trying to walk this back, even though they already published the research and now Congress is looking into it. So the researchers combined the spike protein from Omicron to the original Wuhan strain, which produced a new strain of COVID that is 80% deadly. They used human-mouse hybrids. So they have the exact same response on human beings. That's why they use these human-mouse hybrids. Can you imagine how freaky that is? Human-mouse hybrids?
No.
But that's what they use so that they know that this is exactly the same response on humans. Remember, Omicron was the one that attached itself to everything. Remember how like sticky it was? We kept hearing how sticky Omicron was. It was pretty weak, actually, but it was highly contagious. So if you got Omicron, not a big deal, we were hearing, because, you know, you'd probably get it. Everyone's going to catch it. But it's pretty weak. It's like getting the sniffles. That's what we heard about Omicron, right? Mm-hmm. So what if we took the original strain of COVID that was actually pretty strong, and then we added it with the spike protein of Omicron, and we made it way more contagious? Well, how quickly could this spread? Well, just look at the CDC's own chart. This is from the CDC's own chart. And I want you to look at the deep purple on the right side of your screen. That is Omicron. and how quickly it would spread. Of course, this was in December of 2021. This is how quickly Omicron spread in December 2021 into January 2022. So that purple is the vehicle that they're using to deliver this new deadly virus in their research. Smart move, right? They took the fastest, most contagious one and slapped it on there. We now know that the work of this Boston lab was supported by a grant from the NIH, the National Institutes of Health, specifically from the NAIAD, the NIAID, which is the organization that Dr. Fauci leads. During a Senate hearing on May 11th, Senator or Dr. Rand Paul, whatever you'd like to call him, specifically asked Dr. Fauci about the funding of gain-of-function research at the Wuhan Institute of Virology and the potential link between the COVID-19 outbreak and the lab itself. Gain-of-function, of course, is when you take an existing virus to the lab and then you give it some sort of enhanced abilities, like Steve Rogers getting a super soldier serum. He goes from a wimpy kid into Captain America. Highly risky, very dangerous. This is how the liar responded to that question.
Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute of
Virology. Do they fund Dr. Barrick?
We do not fund.
Do you fund Dr. Barrick's gain-of-function research?
Dr. Barrick does not doing gain-of-function research, and if it is, it's according to the guidelines, and it is being conducted in North Carolina.
Okay. Well, we now know that was a lie.
Do you remember that Obama administration made gain-of-function illegal, and then Fauci begged Trump to remove that, and that was actually removed and made okay again?
Right. So this was illegal. This was illegal for a number of years. Exactly right. And the NIH admits then, after this little interlude, that no, in fact, they were funding risky research in Wuhan. So the NIH then admitted that, oh, yes, they did indeed fund that gain-of-function research. And yes, that back under the Obama administration, Fauci had directed funds from the NIH to gain-of-function research in North Carolina. And it was later moved to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And, oh, yes, according to the evidence, the EcoHealth Alliance in New York City that received funding from Fauci was working with the Wuhan lab, creating a highly contagious bioweapon. Whoops, we forgot to tell you. So I was just lying to you in front of Congress. And he still has a job. He's not been fired. He's also still, to this day, the highest paid government official. So then when questioned on this, after this release about the...
Okay, we're going to bring it back up in a moment. I just want to say goodbye to our WBA audience because they're going to break for the news. You can continue to listen to this. And then I've got two short clips from members of the European Union shouting out to Great Britain, France, and the United States for its support of terrorism. Yes.
For WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bangert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. Britain's Conservative Party is moving to quickly replace outgoing Prime Minister Liz Truss after she stepped down yesterday amid intense political and economic pressures. Truss's 45 days as Prime Minister was the shortest in British history. Several British lawmakers are vying to fill her role, including Truss's direct predecessor, Boris Johnson, who was pushed out amid his own scandals related to staff parties held in violation of pandemic lockdowns. Other candidates positioned to replace Truss include former Treasury Chief Rishi Sunak and Parliamentary Leader Penny Mordaunt. After Conservative lawmakers whittle the choices down to two candidates, party membership will vote on a final decision. Just 172,000 people in Britain are members of the Conservative Party, out of a total population of over 67 million. A national election involving the opposition Labour Party does not have to be held until 2024. Ukrainian and Russian officials have warned of the risk to a massive dam in southern Ukraine, each warning that their opponent is poised to blow the dam up, unleashing a flood across swaths of the Kherson region annexed by Russia late last month. A Russian commander said Ukrainian forces were prepared to strike the dam with U.S.-supplied missiles, a claim that Ukrainians reject. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, in turn, said Russia had mined the dam and was planning to blame its destruction on Ukraine. Russian officials have rejected that claim. The Kakhovka Dam supplies water to the Crimean Peninsula and to the nearby Zaporizhzhia nuclear plant, and also supplies energy through an attached hydroelectric plant. A Russian official claimed yesterday that Western weapons shipped to Ukraine were finding their way to black markets, echoing concerns from some Western law enforcement officials. Russian Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Maria Zakharova told reporters in Moscow that a, quote, considerable part of these weapons have already entered or will soon enter the black market, end quote. She did not immediately provide evidence to support that claim. Leaders of the Interpol and Europol policing networks have also raised concerns about weapons trafficking out of Ukraine. A statement from Europol in July said the threat of such trafficking, quote, might even be higher once the conflict has ended, end quote. In domestic news, a federal appeals court ruled unanimously yesterday that Senator Lindsey Graham must testify before the Atlanta special grand jury investigating possible criminal efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election. The ruling upholds a lower court decision ordering Graham to testify, despite his repeated attempts not to appear before the grand jury. Graham's lawyers had asked the judge to block the subpoena due to his status as a current senator, but the court said he, quote, failed to demonstrate that this approach would violate his rights, end quote. Graham was originally subpoenaed by Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis in July to testify over his spreading of false allegations of voter fraud in the 2020 election and over phone calls he had with Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and his staff in support of Trump's efforts to have the state called in his favor. And new U.S. unemployment claims dropped last week to a seasonally adjusted 214,000 claims, below levels economists had predicted.